And this week we are reading Neil Gaiman. Fuck. And this week.
And we're the drunk guys.
Fuck, let's just say.
We haven't even started drinking yet.
And.
Welcome to Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, book clubs aren't just for women, and need makes everything better.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
And we're the drunk guys.
Oh my god.
We are reading Neil Gaiman's American Gods. I think we gotta start drinking. We got a lot of drinking ahead of us today.
We have a lot. And we have something different to start out.
You might have heard us mention the nectar of the Norse gods. We have here, Nate, you brought this a while back.
Mead is part of the story, because it's about Vikings, a little bit about Vikings and stuff like that. So we actually have mead to drink right now, mead to try. And this is not just any mead. This is called Viking's Blood.
It's by an unpronounceable collection of consonants.
And O's with circles through them.
Mead, Nordic honey wine with hibiscus and hops added. Based on a recipe from about year 1700. This might be the strongest thing we've had so far. It is a 19% alcohol beverage. I don't think there's much in here. Because we drank a shit ton of it. We have just enough to seal our deal.
We don't have to drink three glasses like Shadow. All right.
Cheers. Well, man, that is very floral smelling.
Yeah.
And you could smell booze at you know, 19%. You'd be surprised if you can't. It smells sweet.
Whoa.
You know, I don't taste the alcohol in this, though. I mean, it has a warming feeling, but it doesn't. I don't taste that booze.
It's not like scotch where it just like burns your whole being.
Exactly.
So it doesn't burn like scotch, but I would say it's definitely strong. And this is so sweet.
This will warm you up on a cold Scandinavian night if their socialized medicine doesn't first. It's pretty good, though. That's why the bottle is gone already. We've been working our way through this bottle for a while.
Wow.
And by the way, it's Viking Blood.
Viking Blood? Oh, sorry, I mispronounced it.
Yeah, they they used all the O's when they wrote Oslo, so they had to leave that out. It's delicious. I've had only a few meads in my day, but this is probably the best one, maybe because it has hops in it. It reminds me of beer. I don't really taste the hops directly, I must say.
It's just so sweet.
The hops must be there to kind of balance it out. I mean, this is a sweet wine, but it's also strong, so I can only imagine how much honey they must have put in it to begin with. So we'll talk about the scene with the mead in the book when we get to that point in the plot. Let's just introduce the plot itself. This book is from 2001 and was a huge success. Won the Hugo, the Nebula, the Locus, the Stoker, Bram Stoker, like a whole bunch of different sort of genre fiction, sci-fi, fantasy awards. Neil Gaiman is known for a lot of different things, partially for it is probably his most famous book, but he also,
I don't think so,
comic book writer. He did Sandman, which is really, really influential and famous comic. Or graphic novel, I guess. What else is he? Coraline.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
And just a bunch of other kind of weird things, like weird books. And they are, I've read a bunch. I like them all. We'll talk about his style later. This one is about a main character named Shadow, who is an ex-con.
Mm-hmm.
And when he leaves prison, he becomes embroiled in this extremely important battle between the old gods and the new gods.
Right. In America.
Hence the title.
Hence the name.
So he spends the majority of his time with one particular god or character. You don't know right away they're a god, but in our fashion, we will spoil the whole book for you.
Oh, as always.
Spoiler alert, 5 minutes ago.
Or spoiler alert, going back to episode one.
Yeah.
We spoil the books in this one.
Holden's a bitch. So the main character.
Did I make that joke in the last episode?
I think we make that joke a lot of times because, it's true. And no one has contradicted us yet.
No.
But you can if you tweet us at DrunkGuysBC. Or send us an email at drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com. So the main character, Shadow, hangs out with the main god character, Wednesday, who is Odin. He is Odin. He's
the Viking god Odin.
Yeah, he has lots of different names that he's used, but he goes by Wednesday in the book, which is because Wednesday is named for Odin.
Like Odin's Day.
Yeah.
Spelt in Norse.
So
it's actually Wednesday.
Another version. So another version of Odin is Woden. Not hard to see that. And in Old English, when you wanted to change certain words to the possessive, to the genitive case, you would invert, instead of how we put apostrophe S at the end of it, they would add an ES at the end of it. So that's how you go from Woden to Wodeness, and that's how Wednesday is spelled so fucked up.
Okay.
A little lesson there for you in Old English phonology or whatever. So, or morphology. Anyway, Odin is a kind of old dude. He has, he doesn't look like you'd think Odin to look. He's not like riding a horse and wearing a wizard's robe or something. But
he's just a dude in a suit.
But he has the glass eye because Odin has only one eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he is
speaking of which, one of my favorite lines from the book where Shadow says, "Hey, Wes, before I think this is before Shadow knows he's a god. hey, where did you lose your eye? I didn't lose it. I know exactly where I left it.
Yeah, that's right.
those little funny little lines.
Yeah, Wednesday is very clever. He is really good at tricking people and conning them. So there's various scenes where he kind of shifts from being this confident man of a certain age to being a doddering old fool mm-hmm. in a way to get away without paying for shit and tricking people with like, oh, I'll give you a 20. Oh, no, let me give you a 10. Oh, I'll put on my credit card. Oh, no, wait, let me give back that 10. I'll give you the 5. Uh-huh. That sort of trick. And he identifies himself right away as the best liar you'll ever meet. And he is a con man extraordinaire, which is important to the plot of the book. So they go around and Odin, Wednesday, is warning the other gods. And it's not just the Norse gods. America has, anybody who has ever come to America or ever lived in America and believed in something has brought that god to the United States.
And these gods are real. They are basically real people that sort of blend in everyday life. They just also happen to be gods, and they go about trying to do their god thing while actually kind of being people at the same time. So just as an example, the old Egyptian gods, they're undertakers in Illinois.
In Cairo, Illinois.
Exactly. And the book is full of interesting little things like that.
It is really clever with the way they do it, right? And sometimes the names are spelt a little differently. So the Egyptian gods, well, I guess it must be like Anubis and Osiris, I guess. They are Jackal. It looks like a friendship, but like a jackal, that's what Anubis was represented by. Mm-hmm. So when Egyptians mummified pharaohs and other people, the head priest wore a jackal mask to sort of channel Anubis. And Wednesday is trying to gather all these gods for this war. There's a war coming between the old gods and the new gods, who are things like media and technology. Those are the things people worship now instead of the old gods. And as the old gods lose their followers, as you may know, unless you are a Wiccan, nobody really worships Odin anymore. Nobody really worships Toth or Tote, or however the fuck you say that guy's name anymore.
No idea.
Or a whole host of other ancient gods, you know, the ones that we call mythology. Mm-hmm. Everyone really call them, I mean, they're gods, but no one ever refers to it as the Norse religion. It's always Norse mythology, or it's the Greek mythology. It's not, we tend to think of it in like anthropological terms. Look what these people believe. How quaint.
How silly. How backwards.
Don't they understand that a 2,000-year-old Jew died for our sins, and that's who we worship, but we're not Jews? Don't they get it?
Right.
The gods become weaker as they lose their followers and they're no longer worshipped. So the gods have to resort to clever ways to still get the attention and devotion that they need to survive. Mm-hmm. So one example in the beginning is this. It seems like a totally unrelated scene to the book, and it kind of is just this vignette.
And it's like page 3.
It is right up front of a hooker and a John. And the John's like, all right, hooker, I'm just going to bang you. And she's like, that's great. Just do me one favor. Worship me. And he's like, I'm paying you to bang you. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. And she's like, just worship me. He's like, yeah, whatever. I just need to jizz on you. So he's banging her, and she's like, yeah, worship me. He's like, oh yeah, I worship you. She's like, yeah, keep going. And he's like, it's amazing the sex he's getting out of this hooker. And then at the end of it, he realizes he's being consumed by her vagina, mm-hmm. which is quite a trick. And he is sacrificing himself essentially to her. And I believe it's the Queen of Sheba is who that's supposed to be. I don't really know anything about that character.
That's how this goddess keeps herself looking young and, you know, has energy and power and things like that by basically tricking people into worshiping her.
Right. And the other gods don't look so hale and hearty. They're older now, like Chernabog.
Chernabog, who, yeah, in Chicago.
Who is some sort of Slavic deity, which I also had never heard of. By the way, there's gods that you, I mean, depending on what kind of nerd you are for this information, gods you will have heard of. I think pretty much everyone who is interested in mythology to some degree has heard of Odin and Loki and Thor, especially since they're fucking Marvel characters now. Mm-hmm. Chernabog, I've never heard of. There's a lot of really obscure ones, which is kind of interesting. It makes it more fun. Chernabog, in his god days, they sacrificed people to him by hitting them in the head with a rock. And so Chernabog, his livelihood, now that he's no longer really a god, or his livelihood was working in a slaughterhouse.
The stockyards in Chicago.
As the
person with the hammer that kills the cattle. They walk up the line and he kills the cattle. And there's this whole scene where he's describing what he used to do. And this is before, this is when Shadow was still trying to figure, still learning, oh wait, these are gods? Like, he still doesn't get it, but you know. And so anyway, Chernabog is explaining with like love how he used to be able to kill the cow with one blow of his hammer.
With the art of what he did, the artistry that he had. as the cow murderer. Gotta get those burgers somehow. I'm not hating on them. Just because I want to wash, not that I want to get rid of the meat tissues, it was really delicious, but I want to drink something else.
Right.
We're going to open up our next beer, since we're kind of talking about it. This is one I brought this week. It's this Sam Adams Norse Legend, which is a sati, Scandinavian style, that you don't really see ever, except for Dogfish Head's made one I've tried, and there's this one which I've not tried. It is a 7.7% alcohol, so this is pusillanimous compared to that mead, brewed with its juniper berries and aged on juniper berries, which is interesting. So, like, are we looking for like a gin flavor? Is that what's going to happen here? It certainly smells. You can smell the berries in there. It smells nice. It's a nice amber color, sort of darker tan head.
It's also very sweet. Not as sweet as that mead, but
no, nothing is. That was intense. You know, truthfully, I don't really know what a juniper berry tastes like.
Me neither.
I could tell you. I just know, I believe gin is made with juniper berries. And I've had gin like one time in my life because I'm not an old lady from fucking 1953.
Yeah, I had a gin and tonic once. It was fine.
Sure, it's fine, but I'm a beer guy. I try to drink hard liquor at the same speed I drink beer. And that's a terrible idea. That is horrendous. And I throw up drunk at like 3 in the afternoon. I mean, that in itself is not definitely a unique situation for me, but it is intense. I'd rather enjoy the beers too. I don't have to like pinch my nose to drink something. So I'm not a gin fan. Sorry. But this is an interesting beer.
Sorry, old ladies.
Old ladies who have gone onto their grandson Benjamin's iTunes and are listening to podcasts. Oh, the drunk fellers.
Granny, as long as you give us a rating, it's fine.
Yes, at 5 stars. One for every cat you have.
One for every 5 cats you have.
Yes. So we're talking about the gods. I mean, that's the plot. You're going to meet lots of different gods in the book. They are all interesting, and it's clever how they kind of masquerade as a normal person, and they keep elements of their mythology with them. Like, is it Kali? She's an old Indian woman, you know, with graying hair, but, like, people sacrificed humans to Kali and cut off their fucking limbs and heads and shit. Mm-hmm. And then Shadow notices at one point that she's got a little bracelet that the charms on it are just her hands and or bones or something. And she has a necklace that has little charms in their skulls. So they have embedded into their look. But there are scenes when they shift through their other manifestations. So sometimes their shadow doesn't match what they're looking like. So there's a man walking down the street and his shadow is of a big spider. So the plot is about the Shadow helping, you know, because, we said Shadow was released from prison.
Yeah.
Right before he leaves prison, his wife dies in a car accident.
Yeah, he gets released like 2 days early from prison because his wife was dead. His wife had been killed in a car accident. So they let him out 2 days early so that he can go to, the funeral. And it's on the plane that he meets Wednesday, because Wednesday's sitting right next to him.
But you know what, you realize, because Wednesday describes himself as extremely lucky, right? He says that a couple different times. Wednesday's very lucky because Wednesday can influence things to get him to go his way. It's only through a ridiculous sequence of events that Shadow ends up sitting next to Wednesday. Right? He's supposed to be on one plane, and there's a storm, and then it gets delayed, and he misses this plane, so he goes over here, and then they double book a seat that he gets, and then he has to sit.
They bump him up to first class.
There's only one seat in first class. You know, of course, when he's walking in on the plane, the plane's waiting for him, and he sees, and, you know, a guy in first class, which we don't know yet, is Wednesday, and he taps his watch, looking at him, and Shadow's first reaction is like, yeah, I'm making you late, all right, go fuck yourself. But then he has to sit next to him, and then it's because Wednesday has planned all of this.
Yeah.
He is like 11 moves deep into this. More than you even know at this point in the book, even when you realize who he is, he's playing this serious long game, or the long con. The new gods are total assholes, and they are trying to successfully abduct Shadow a few times and rough him up, or they threaten to show him Lucille Ball's tits. And
it also happened. So, you know, they keep saying, why are you working for Wednesday? What is Wednesday doing? And Shadow at this point doesn't know anything. Like, okay, I've met Wednesday, but I don't know anything about him. Shadow has no idea what he's talking about. So part of the book is Shadow just discovering all of this stuff, because it's told from his perspective, and he doesn't understand what's going on, and there are, like, hints about what's going on. It's not until halfway through the book that they even really explain what's going on.
No, and there are clues. You can figure it out.
Certainly.
Especially if you've read Neil Gaiman's most recent book, which is just a bunch of Norse myths retold. Then some of those things, I mean, clearly Neil Gaiman's interested in mythology, and that, I mean, the books are, like, 16 years apart in their release dates, but if you've read that, or you are familiar with those stories, you could start to figure out, from their little hints, that Wednesday is Odin, right? Because the way he doesn't say his name, he says, oh, well, today is my day, you can call me Mr. Wednesday. And that's his name through the book. And then later on, he reveals his other names. Wednesday's plan is to fight in some epic battle the new gods, because that's what people worship today. They worship the new gods, and they don't worship the old gods, and the old gods are losing, and they do not want to disappear. Because there are also scenes, sort of in dreams that Shadow has, where he learns about the old, the forgotten gods. He sees glimpses of the gods who are so long gone that even the people who worship them are not around anymore, or even like known.
The original hunter-gatherers making their way across the Bering Strait to North America, and they're in worshiping the...
the mammoth skull.
Yeah, the mammoth skulls and things like that, and about how they're just completely forgotten. Not only are those people completely forgotten, but so are their gods as well.
And once the gods are forgotten and not worshiped, then the gods, that's how they die. Right? They're not really mortal in the same sense that we are. They don't die from disease or age. I mean, we could talk more about that stuff, but I mean, the plot, the twist.
Yeah, there's a twist which we'll get to, but I think let's talk about the cons.
Yeah,
first.
So Wednesday is a really great trickster, which is interesting because in Norse mythology, Odin is
not
very,
a trickster.
He's not. He's a really interesting character in the mythology. He has the two ravens.
Yeah.
Thought and memory. I forgot what they're Norse. It's like Hugin and Mugin or something like that. And they kind of, his twin ravens help him gather information. He is sacrificed. He killed himself. He hangs himself in the tree of knowledge or a tree of wisdom or something like that to gain knowledge of the world, or the tree of life to gain knowledge of the world. He lost an eye. Like, he's a strange character. He's not the same as like Zeus or something like that. He's a very different type. I mean, they're very different type of people.
He has some similarities to Zeus in the Greek myths because he's sort of like the big god, the sort of most powerful one, he's kind of like the king, but, you know, but he can't do everything. It's not,
right.
He's not the one and only.
He's not omnipotent like the monotheistic faiths have an omnipotent god, whereas the polytheistic faiths, that power is shared amongst different people, and there's like hierarchies of power, and sometimes those shift depending on the story.
Of conflict between the different gods.
Right, so he's the main guy, and he's not really known as the trickster, but throughout this book, he is sneaky. So you kind of think, or at least I did, well, that's just what he has to do to survive now that he's not really worshipped anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's how he cheats people out of getting some money, right? He cheats the person with the, let me give you this bill so you give me the right amount of change trick, or the one where he sets up outside the ATM machine, or the ATM, if you...
Besides, I mean, with the bank heist?
The heist in the book is he goes to a bank and he asks, he's like very charming, goes up to the teller and he says, where's the night deposit box? How do I use these slips? Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much. And then they go there on a Saturday when the bank is closed and people are going to make deposits. And
he puts a sign in front of the bank that says, night deposit box, not... You know, night deposit box closed. He wears a security guard uniform. He sits in front of it and he says, I'll take your deposits and I'll bring them to the bank.
Here's a receipt. It's very, he has he sets up Shadow in another place with a walkie-talkie to pretend
to next to a payphone so that when the police come and check that he says, call this number. This is the number of A1 security.
Yep.
Shadow answers the phone. Hello, yes, this is A1 security.
Like Andy something is his fake name.
Yeah, is... Do you have a security guard at blah, 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 blah intersection? He's like, yes, we do. Oh, is that guy being lazy again?
Is he drinking again?
Tell him to, you know what, blah, blah, blah.
And what's interesting, especially when you know the end of the book, Shadow's really good at the con. He jumps right into it. And he starts going, officer, you know, we're always looking for new guys. Are you interested in earning any side work?
Yeah, we're looking for weekend guards, you know.
He really sells it. And the officers then leave, and they just take some guy doing his job. Then, of course, Shadow and Wednesday regroup, and they go through all these deposits. They kind of, like, throw out the checks.
But they keep all
the
cash.
And they keep the cash. And he's like, that's the trick. And then Shadow, Wednesday is, of course, like, you know, it really works well if you do it at, like, 4 a.m. on a Saturday, because that's when all the bars and the strip clubs go to put their cash in. And you can make a lot of money doing that. But you got to be careful, because sometimes they're going to get suspicious, the bouncers and stuff. But so that's one of the cons. And there's another scene later on where Wednesday... And it's on Christmas Day. They're eating dinner at some sort of diner in the middle of Wisconsin or something. And Wednesday starts reminiscing about his favorite cons. It's like, and they have funny
cool
names.
Part.
It kind of sounds like if you ever watched How I Met Your Mother. Have you watched that show?
Nope.
It's worth checking out. They are not sponsors of the show, so fuck them. But it's a funny show from years past. Barney is Neil Patrick Harris's character, and he has these elaborate plans to fuck women. and they all have names. And it's like he has a book of them, and it's a recurring thing throughout the show. And he's like, oh, I'm going to pull the NASA stunt, or like the NASA play. And I go, what's that? And he goes through these things about how he's going to... Or there's one with like a ridiculous name, like something von Matterhorn. And like, what's that? It's like, oh, well, you just go and you kind of like have this like extremely elaborate thing where you name drop that's your name. And you're like, whatever, von Matterhorn. And then you create a website. So when they Google that name, they'll find that you're like a rich philanthropist from the Switzerland. And then you fuck that woman. And you like turn that into a way to... So he's like, oh, yeah, all these great plans, all these great cons, like the Spanish prisoner and the fiddle.
Yeah,
and
the fiddle.
The bishop. So how does the fiddle work?
So it has something to do with you go to a music dealer, a instrument dealer, and you bring in a violin. You get actually you have to buy two violins.
No,
one is nice and one is shit.
Okay, this might be different.
I guess
in the show.
I don't remember.
You go to a restaurant and you look kind of beat up and shitty looking. You look kind of
sketchy,
like not homeless, but like a guy who's down on his luck to sell it, like a guy who's seen better days. And you buy a meal, and then you say, oh no, I forgot my wallet at my friend's house. I will go get my wallet here. Hold on to my fiddle while I go. I will be back, because this is what I do for my livelihood. If I don't have my fiddle, I can't do anything. This is super important. Of course, I'll be back for the fiddle. So he leaves. In the meantime, the second man in the con, he goes up. He's like, can I see that fiddle? And he looks at it. He's like, no, can it be? Oh, my goodness. This is worth at least $100,000, this fiddle. Mm-hmm. I am a dealer in these sort of instruments. I know a man who will pay $100,000 for this right now without even seeing it. Please give my card to the man who owns this. And then he leaves. He's like, I would talk to myself. I have to leave. I have a plane to catch or a train to catch or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah.
And he leaves. And then the other guy comes back with a wallet. And you know, make sure the wallet looks kind of beat up and shitty looking. A wallet, and he says, make sure it looks like a wallet that's never held more than $100 on its best day, right? So you keep selling the thing that he's like a poor kind of schmuck.
He needs the money.
So he pays for the meal. So thank you so much. And then the person now has the whiff of the potential to make a shit ton of money of ripping off this guy. And they're going to go, you know, my niece just started playing the violin. I'd love to buy her a fiddle. Would you be willing to sell this one? I'll give you $500 for it right now. I'll give you $1,000 for it right now. And meanwhile, this is like a meal that costs $50. Mm-hmm. So it's like, no, I couldn't possibly part with it. Not for $1,000, not for $5,000, because this is my instrument. I've had it for 20 years. I paid money for it so long ago. I rely on it. It's a friend, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And then there's like, how about I give you, $8,000 for it right now? I'll give you $8,000 cash for this, because they're planning on selling it to the dealer.
Yeah, for $100.
And then it gets like, oh, I guess I'll have to go for that. That's, oof. All right, you drive a hard bargain. Here, take my violin. And then, of course, it's fucking worth nothing. And in Shadow,
it's a pawn shop violin.
Well, he says, so let me get you used. You know, you make $8,000 off a $100 violin, and then Winston says, as a point of honor, I never spent more than $5 on one. So he's just a total asshole and con man. And the other really good con is the bishop. You remember, this is where you go into. It's a two man job, of course. You go in to a jeweler. He says, this is the one you can't do anymore. It's my favorite of all time. It doesn't really work anymore. You go in dressed up as a bishop, not just a priest, a full bishop with like fucking purple vestments over and the hat and all sorts of bullshit. And you go in and to a jeweler and you buy an expensive piece of jewelry, like in the book, it's a $1,200 diamond necklace because it's supposed to be the 1920s. And then you pay them in fresh, crisp $100 bills, but one of them has a thumbprint, like a smudge of ink on it. Ooh. So it looks fake. The guy will send that money over to the bank to get it checked. It'll come back. Of course, it's fine. It's real money. And then they'll take the money and the bishop leaves with the necklace. Then, of course, a minute or two later, the bishop is dragged back in there by the other guy who's dressed as a cop. Hmm. And he says, did you just sell something to this guy? This guy is like a notorious, counterfeiter or fraudster or whatever. Did he pay? What? Let me see the money he gave. And the guy's like, no, I checked it out. This money is definitely real. It was sent to the bank. Yeah, but then you don't know who you're messing with. This guy, he's been passing phony bills all over in fucking Albuquerque and Buffalo and whatever. So let me see those bills. Yeah, these are definitely fake bills. And he says, I'm going to take this. What did he purchase? Oh, he purchased this necklace. All right, here's a receipt for the necklace. We're going to have to use this as evidence right now in his trial. But after the trial, you'll get it returned. So hold on to this receipt. So then they leave with the money and the necklace. And then Shadow's like, well, so what happened? Well, he asks, like, what if these plans don't work? He says, was the money fake too? He's like, no, of course the money was real. Because you have no intention of letting them keep the money. So he has all these plans, and this is where one of the most important bits of foreshadowing happens in the book, where Shadow says, all those cons are a two-man job. Mm-hmm. Did you have a partner? Since you talk about doing them all the time, and you loved him so much, Odin sort of like says, wistfully.
Yes, I used to.
I used to have a junior partner. Now, it's interesting. He says, so you could interpret it a couple ways because it turns out, spoiler, the whole plot of the book is a giant two-man con.
It's a giant con. And this is what you find out at the very end. And I definitely didn't. I mean, there's great foreshadowing. I'm not smart enough to have figured it out before they spelled it out for me at the end. So in reality, Odin, or Wednesday, is creating a war between the old gods and the new gods because he is the god of war. When people go and fight a war and kill each other, that's worshiping Odin. Even if they don't know it, that's worshiping Odin. And his actual real junior partner is Loki, which we didn't tell you this before, but Shadow is in prison with Loki. That's his cellmate in the very beginning of the book called, but it's a convict called Loki Lysmith.
Yeah, which, okay.
Which is total foreshadowing, which I definitely didn't notice at the time.
Get it at all,
so how does Loki get worshipped in this?
Here's how it works. So in the war, Odin will benefit, or Wednesday will benefit because of the bloodshed. Mm-hmm. Loki will benefit from the chaos.
From the chaos, exactly. So really, it's this really long, really elaborate two-man con. The war between the old gods and the new gods, which is about to happen at the end.
And Loki is masquerading as sort of one of the new gods.
Yeah.
He's Mr. World.
Oh, yeah. So Loki is in reality, it's this whole con. Anyway, I thought that was a very clever ending.
I say foreshadowing only because I just reread the book. I read it first a few years ago and did not remember enough details to talk about it. Of course, so I was rereading it. And as I read it, more and more came back to me. I was like, yeah, that's so fucking smart or sneaky of you, Neil Gaiman, because I definitely would not have seen that coming. And I remember reading it the first time, too, going, wait, that's what's been going on?
Yeah.
That's what this is about? That is awesome. But it goes awry.
It does go awry because Shadow figures it out. And he tells everybody, no.
No, he doesn't tell him. Well, he does. He tries to stop it.
Yeah, he tries to stop it.
But they go parley, the new gods parley with Odin, but they kill him. Mm-hmm. They kill him instead. And that's all part of Odin's plan. And that's going to create the war. That's that galvanizes all the old gods. Holy shit, Odin was right this whole time. Because they were like, no, they don't really care about us, or it's not really worth it. And now it's like, oh man, they really mean to kill us. This is a problem. And then Shadow, because of his bond that he made with the Mead, with Odin, he has to keep his vigil. He has to keep Odin's vigil, which means he has to hang himself from the tree of life for however many days, and Shadow has to die. And then he goes to the underworld, and then there's like all this other elaborate shit that brings Shadow back to life, which has to do with his wife and the coin from Mad Sweeney, who should probably talk about that.
Another god, which is a leprechaun. Who...
Right, so then not everyone's a god, right? Some of them are like just other sort of like...
minor deities.
Or mythological figures, right? A leprechaun, there's a character, a kobold, right? Mm-hmm. There's an ifrit in one little flashback, a little vignette, right? The cab driver thing. They're not all gods. They're just sort of characters from mythology. Things that people would have either feared or tried to placate over the years. Those sort of things. So Mad Sweeney is probably the most interesting one because I still don't quite understand what was happening. Mad Sweeney is a leprechaun. I'm using air quotes, but he's 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
7 foot tall Irish leprechaun guy.
And that the idea that leprechauns are tiny or midgets, that's just trying to fool people.
Right.
Just so people don't recognize the real leprechauns when they see them, something like that.
Which is weird. It's kind of clever, too.
Yeah, and Wednesday has a funny little joke when he explains it. I just can't remember it right now.
But I don't remember it either. But Mad Sweeney is your, Irish stereotype. Like, he's a drunk brawler.
Yeah.
Well, and maybe not necessarily always, but it turns out Wednesday pays him to be a drunk brawler in one scene to test Shadow and see what Shadow's made of when they first meet.
Mm-hmm.
And Shadow beats him up, of course, because Shadow is a big dude. He's not 7 feet tall. They never really say how big he is, but it's meant every time somebody meets him, they're like, whoa, mister, you're a big guy. Because he's a big, ex-con who just lifted weights and read books in prison.
And practiced magic tricks.
Sleight of hand coin tricks, particularly. And that draws him with Mad Sweeney. Mad Sweeney says, I'll show you, with his drunken brogue, I'll show you a fucking trick. he snatches a coin out of the air. Like a gold coin. And Shadow's like, oh, you palmed it. Because Shadow, using, which I like because I watch a lot of magic videos on YouTube of like Penn and Teller and shit. Like, I know the terms. I could never do those. And like, oh, that's a fucking French drop or whatever that does. He says, oh, you palmed that coin. He's like, no, I'm not palming it. I'm just pulling it out of the air.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, no, that's stupid. And he's like, no, I'm pulling. He keeps pulling these coins out. He's like, that's amazing. And then he ends up giving Shadow a gold coin from
like his special magic gold coin.
The Hoard of the Sun.
And then Shadow drinks three glasses of mead to like seal the bargain because he's passed the test. Mm-hmm. And that's where the mead comes in.
Yes. And that coin, Shadow doesn't. So Shadow then goes to see his wife's funeral. And he learns that his wife died in a car. He knew she would die in a car accident. Mm-hmm. Turns out she died while blowing the man she was having an extended affair with.
Yeah.
That's quite a slap in the face.
For sure.
Because his whole thing, he was the model prisoner in jail. He's like, I'm going to do my time, not get into trouble, and come out. And then, and he had a plan. Like, the first thing, he had three things he was going to do, right? One was take a long bath. Two was bang his wife for several days. And I forgot what the third one was. It might have just been, like, never think about prison again or something like that. And his wife dies with, as he learns, verbatim, with this other guy's cock in her mouth. And he goes to the funeral, and he's all torn up because he loved his wife, whatever. But she was cheating on him. He doesn't know, you know, not that. As a married man, there were no extenuating circumstances there, unless like he was raping her mouth as he drove down the car. Like, yeah, you never be like, oh, I understand, honey. It was, you know, you had to show him which exit it was on the highway. There's no.
So he has this special magic coin. He drops the coin in her grave, just thinking, you know, whatever. I have this coin. Turns out it was magic, and she comes to life. So she's now basically a walking corpse.
But she has the majority of her mental facility still. She's still a little weird because she doesn't, she can't, she says, oh, I don't really, like, there are certain things she says, like, oh, that's kind of fuzzy to me now that you're dead, you don't really think like that anymore. But more or less, she's not a ghost, she's a physical thing walking around. She is able, at one point, to kill a bunch of people when it's necessary to help her husband, or ex-husband, I guess. But she's also slowly decaying. It's kind of gross. There's a part where she like coughs up a wad of maggots. It's really nasty. Really nasty. But she has the coin, which is important. Like, there's Matt Sweeney. Matt Sweeney's in the show a lot. We should talk about the show later. But he comes back to Shadow. I need that coin back. He's like, I gave that coin away. And so now I'm fucked. And then he kills himself. He drinks himself to death. I don't remember why that was so important that he got the fucking coin back. I don't remember.
I don't either.
I mean, maybe just because he did.
I mean, just because Matt Sweeney, you mean why Matt Sweeney wanted the coin back?
Yeah, why didn't he need the coin back?
Because it was his one magic coin in his hoard. Like, that's where his power comes from.
Right.
So where Matt Sweeney's, like, leprechaun magic comes from that specific coin. And so he gave it away by accident, so he needs it back.
That makes sense.
How he was actually able to die, by killing himself, by drinking himself to death, I mean. I don't know, something like that.
Right, but yeah, he says, give me $20, I get a ticket out of here. And Shadow gives him the $20, and he's like, there's no bus ticket, that's $20.
He bought a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah. Of Irish whiskey, of course, and drank that. Which means it was thrice distilled, not twice. Which is one of the main differences between Irish and Scotch whiskey. That and the only other difference is how much I throw up when I drink them.
Right. No, for me, there's no difference there. No difference. Can we go back to the cons for a minute?
Yeah, please.
So here's the thing about the cons. It was really fun learning about that. It almost felt like a nonfiction book for a minute, like a book about con men. These cons, even though, are still around, and you can find all of them on the internet. The exact same the exact same ways that a Wednesday would trick people out of their money way back through the centuries, you can still find on the internet, such as the Spanish prisoner con.
Which you might know today as the Prince of Nigeria
con. The Nigerian Prince con.
It has been around. I learned this on an episode of QI. That con's been around for centuries, a couple hundred years. People would write a letter to a person in England, say,
A random address, a random person.
And probably you'd probably write to hundreds of random addresses, right? Because these kind of work
or if you know who might actually have some money to write to.
Or is a dope. And you say, oh, I am imprisoned by the Spanish. My jailers will only release me if I pay them X amount of, you know, relatively small amount of money. Yeah. If I give them £200 or I don't know what it would, but it seems like a lot for back then. But whatever it is.
Fair amount of money, but not an absurd amount of money.
Right. Yeah. If it's like $1 million, well, I can't help you there. But it's like, if you give me $200, right, in today's terms, but they say, I am the son of the Duke of blah, 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 I will gladly pay you this extremely higher amount. You know?
$10,000, $100,000, $1 million as soon as I get out.
And then, of course, you send it and you never hear the fucking guy again because he was never in a Spanish jail. Well, now it's, oh, I am the deposed prince of Nigeria.
The Nigerian email scam.
I will wire you. My fortune of however many thousand fucking yams I have, and then in exchange for if you just give me your bank account routing number, I will be able to wire it to you, and then that will
Or you send me a money order for $1,000, and I will, if you send me your bank account, then I will give you $10,000 when I get my money out of blah, blah, blah,
yams.
Whatever. Yeah.
My yams.
So, yams. $1,000 and 10 million yams. That is still a scam on the internet. So is the bank heist scam where Wednesday pretends to be the guard collecting the night donation, the night drop. That is called a man in the middle attack, which is still a way that someone could get your bank account details. So you might get a phishing email in your email account that looks like it's from your bank. And the email will say something like, please update your login information, or please, you know, we have this special deal for you if you put this amount of money into this type of savings account. So you click on it, you put in your username and password on what looks like a real website, but it's actually a fake website. Now they have your login information and they can go in and empty your bank account.
Right.
And there are many variations on that exact thing.
It kind of sounds like the ransomware thing, almost. Or, warning, your computer has been seized by the CIA because you have pirated material and child pornography. Pay $300 or we will arrest you.
In Bitcoin. Right. And we will arrest you.
Which, my dad totally fell for that scam. And then he gets a phone call. His computer gets seized and, like, call this number. He calls up and, like, yes, this is officer, whatever, agent this. We are going to do this. We're going to arrest you or we're going to arrest your wife, is what they said, at her job. And I don't know how much information they really had, but and of course, like, my dad's a, you know, 60-something-year-old man, and he's like, oh, no, I don't want that to happen. That would be fucking awful. Shit. Anything. What do I have to do? And he's like, at the same time, like, I didn't even fucking look at child pornography. I was looking at Bush pictures in the late 80s. And then, all right, just send the money and I'll be fine. And then he, like, starts thinking about this and then somehow finds a fucking number for a CIA or FBI office in the Yellow Pages and calls them up to ask about it to make sure, like, everything's cool. And they're like, sir, do you really think we would tell you we're going to arrest you before we do it? Like, yeah. We're gonna be like, heads up, we're coming for you, your wife, in a couple hours. Don't tell her. Shh, surprise. Or just give us $300. And he's like, oh, man, I am an idiot. And every once in a while, those people still call him up, and he'll go from, oh, another virus? Oh, let me get my credit card number. Hold on, one second. And then he'll just launch into a barrage of, like, I fucked your mother, and just yells at the guys until they yell back at him, I fucked your mother, and then he hangs up. So that con is alive and well.
Alive and well, sure.
Speaking of what it takes to pull off a con... We got one more beer here.
So the beer I brought today is called Arrogant Bastard by Stone Brewing. I have had this beer numerous times.
I'm sorry, that's a little foamy. I have the tap handle for it right there.
You do, yeah.
We have had a lot of this just preparing to talk about this, any sort of book. You know.
Anyway, the reason why it applies is because a Wednesday is totally an arrogant bastard.
Oh.
I mean, he's awesome, but he is an arrogant bastard.
I would say all the gods are arrogant bastards. I mean, it's kind of their thing, right?
None of them, yeah.
Kind of all arrogant bastards. Though I must say, I really like Anansi and his stories.
Yeah.
And do you remember the one, he tells a story. When they go to the first meeting of the gods, Odin's like, no stories. He's like, all right, no stories. I'll just warm them up. And of course, he tells a story.
The story of stealing the tiger's balls.
Yes. How he stole the tiger's balls. He's like, you know, because Anansi is from like Ghana or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Although I would argue he's actually from the slaves who came to the New World and told the story.
Yes.
Because Anansi's the trickster,
right, but the thing is, like, all of these gods, they're the American versions of these gods.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones brought here by people. So there's Wednesday is the American Odin. There is an Icelandic Odin too, who lives in Iceland, where he was worshipped. So yes, you're right. He was brought here by the slaves, but this is a real god as well, or a real mythological character. Who's from West Africa, and he is the trickster god, and he actually is sort of the subject of an entire sort of sequel to this that Neil Gaiman wrote.
There is kind of a sequel, although isn't he actually writing a real sequel?
I believe he is writing a real sequel. Last I heard, he is writing a real sequel, which I will totally read, but
Anansi has his own sort of sequel, which is not about Wednesday, it's not about Shadow, it's not about any of that. It's about a random dude who he discovers he's actually Anansi's son.
Yes.
Anyway, it's a very amusing, funny book, but it is not really anything like American gods.
It's in the same world.
Same universe.
That's where it is. Yeah. Same universe. It's Anansi. Well, yeah, it's not even. It's in England. That book. It's Anansi Boys. Mm-hmm. And I've just learned. I've not read them yet, but there apparently are two other short stories in the American gods sort of universe that I've not read. So I'll have to look into those. It kind of leads to Neil. You know, Anansi Boys and American Gods. Same universe. They're also kind of the same plot.
Yeah. So I read probably four Neil Gaiman books in the span of only a couple months. And after reading the fourth one, I realized that Neil Gaiman, at least for a number of his books, has a formula. He has a formula for the plot.
Absolutely.
He has a formula for the plot. Now, we definitely made fun of Dan Brown for doing the exact same thing, having a major formula for the plot just a couple weeks ago. However, I think Neil Gaiman's isn't nearly as bad. And in fact, it's still a very interesting... what happens in his formula is still very interesting, and I think is, you know, there are tons of good stories, whereas with Dan Brown, it's always the same fucking stupid thing.
Yeah, Neil...
Okay,
so what's the formula?
Here's the formula. That the main character is a regular human, and he's just living his regular life. And then suddenly he either meets or has to interact with a different, he's introduced to a character from some form of magic world.
Yeah.
Right? He's some form of magic world. And without fail, the person from the magic world doesn't really explain what's going on. What is really going on sort of assumes that the regular human dude, the main character, actually understands or is completely incredulous. Like, how do you not understand this? Of course the blah, blah, blah does the blah, blah, blah. Duh. That's the way things have always been. But it's actually some magic thing. And so the course of the story, for many of Neil Gaiman's stories, is the sort of regular human discovering the magic world and having to, you know, and interacting with that.
But also ending up being the most important figure in that magic world and somehow solving the big problem that magic world is facing.
Mm-hmm.
So in American Gods, it's Shadow and the Gods Showdown. In Anansi Boys... it's sort of the same plot, except
it's
whatever.
It's Anansi's random son who lives in London.
He's like Spider or something. Was like the others. Like yeah,
he's got this alter ego. But anyway, also is a regular dude who eventually meets somebody from the magic world. I was like, what is this going on?
Then there's a Coraline where it's like Coraline is the young girl, and then there's like the door on the other side that leads to the other side of her house, like the other universe version of that, with like the mean doll thing. Mm-hmm. Then the graveyard book. What's his name? Bod or something like that is his name.
Bod.
And there's all these like ghosts and monsters and then there's like the weird secret magic killing people. And what else there? Neverwhere.
I haven't read Neverwhere, but the ocean at the end of the lane is very much like a very normal regular boy who's a regular human, and the next door is a girl who's like all magic and stuff and has to go through and find out all this stuff.
Neverwhere is really good. I really liked it. And it's the same. It's a guy gets somehow involved in this like. There's this like underworld of London, you know, like sewers and shit like that, but and sort of magical too. And he gets involved in that. Really good book, but there is a formula. But you know what? The variables are so different. You know, we have to distill it quite a bit to get to a formula. You know, whereas Dan Brown, you're just like Robert Langdon runs into the CIA. Scratch that. FBI. Now scratch that. Opus Dei. There we go. And they are hiding the Son of Christ. Scratch that. Next president. Scratch that. Unbreakable computer virus.
When I read, you know, the first Dan Brown book I read was Da Vinci Code. I want to say it was before page 40 of the second Dan Brown book I read, where I was like, wait a minute, this is the same thing.
Yes,
it's the exact same plot. Whereas for Neil Gaiman, I had to read like four or five or six of them before I was like, wait a minute, this sounds familiar all of a sudden. And they're all, so even though it is a little bit of a formula, it's fine. I don't mind at all.
The writing, I mean, it's really unfair to compare Neil Gaiman to Dan Brown because the writing is much better. It is more interesting and the details that are woven in, it never feels didactic. You know, there's all this shit where you're learning about different mythologies, and then you're learning about sleight of hand coin trick terminology and con man games and all these other things that feel nonfiction-y in the book. And it doesn't feel shoehorned in like it really does with something like Dan Brown books, where it's like, and oh, stupid character who is only here so I could explain things to you. You don't know what the Illuminati was? Well, I will tell you. Oh, dumb plant character, you don't know what the third law of thermodynamics is? Let me explain that to you right now.
Because I happen to be a brilliant physicist. Brilliant and beautiful physicist.
And a symbologist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, so there is a formula. But, you know, maybe at a certain point, pretty much every author, there are very few authors that have a wide range of books, don't have some, you can't boil it down to something. But it is a kind of, not unique, he's nothing limited to it. I mean, kind of Harry Potter might fit into the same formula as this too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Harry Potter's this boy literally discovers a magical world, and he is the messiah of it, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, in the first Harry Potter book, there is plenty of everybody, all the you know, Hagrid and all the other people saying, how do you not know this? Don't you know that the blah, blah, blah does the blah, blah, blah? When, even though it's like totally crazy magic.
Though. It's usually Ron, right?
You don't know what Quidditch is?
You don't know Bernie Bot's Every Flavored Beans? Or whatever the fuck it is? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you don't know who Dumbledore is? Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's the same thing. And that's probably just a fantasy thing now. A lot of fantasy novels have that. Because if you're in a fantasy book and everybody already knows how the world works, it's kind of hard to explain that to the reader.
Yeah.
How's the reader going to learn what it's all about? And you could, and there are books that do it, but you just have to read through and eventually figure it out on your own, where they just immerse you in this world. But those are probably off-putting to some kinds of readers, where they start using terms that you don't know, and you have to figure out what an Aes Sedai is, or whatever the fuck.
Yep. Right? Mm-hmm. Or at least how to pronounce it.
Yes. Or I learned how to close that book and not read any more of them.
Yes, you did.
So I think he's got a formula. It's fine. But for this book, formula or no formula, what the hell is it about? You know, we talked about the plot for a while. Is there a message? Is there a moral, an allegory? What is it?
So when I first read it, I really didn't feel that there was I didn't think that Neil Gaiman was trying to make a comment about modern society, or he wasn't trying to have a social message about what is it really. And I'm actually still not convinced he is. However, I do have a theory about what it would be if he was trying to make a message.
Well, if we want to get all postmodern, there is a message if you want there to be a message, sort of. If you find a message, it's there.
That's way too deep for, you know, where I'm a little bit too drunk to go into those details. But
that's balls deep.
The story is about a battle between the old gods and the new gods. But, you know, and the new gods are things like media, like television. It's just the fact that the god of media came about when everyone got a television in their home in the 1950s and would sit around the television every single night, you know, eating dinner on their TV trays or whatever. That's worshiping the television. So those are the new gods. So if there's a, like, social message about today's society in American Gods, maybe it's something like the tension or the conflict between traditional culture and modern culture, between our past and our present/future, between, you know, the magic/religion/anything supernatural versus, you know, reason and science.
You say old world, new world?
So you can sort of think old world versus new world, and the America, because it's called American Gods, is a really, you know, a really interesting place to set the story, because America has people from all over the world who brought their own traditional cultures and values and gods. However, assimilating to American culture in whatever period of time you're doing that, whether it's today or 100 years ago, assimilating to American culture kind of means at least halfway forgetting about the old gods. And especially now that we're in the late 20th century, 21st century, where, you know, even though people might say they're a whatever, Facebook makes everybody the same. Facebook, Twitter, social media, and everybody talks a lot more about what was on, you know, what the latest rapper is talking about, or what was on the latest reality TV show, or the latest Twitter tweet storm by our dear president, you know, than any type of actual religion or actual belief.
True. I think all those arguments are valid and can be made. I don't know if he meant all of them. He doesn't strike me as the, I'm going to now make a comment about this kind of thing author. Mm-hmm. I think he just like, this will be a cool story. And he must have been cognizant of this, right? Oh, these are different things. This is our values have changed. And people mm-hmm. don't want, and maybe thought of the question, why don't people worship Odin anymore? What happened to Odin? You know, and it is super interesting. But
whereas
I think
Fahrenheit 451 mm-hmm. was very much talking about how people don't read anymore and the dangers of sort of mass consumer culture and sort of the shallowness of celebrity, everything. That was the point of the book, for sure, no doubt. Whereas for this book, is that really the point? I'm actually not sure.
Well, I mean, one thing he could be saying, or could be heard, is that if you're comparing Anubis to media, you're saying something about the transience of the gods, right? If you're saying they're all gods, they're all things we worship, well, at a certain point in time, people sacrificed animals or children to various gods. Well, now we sacrifice time and money to these other gods. Well, there's no permanence, right? And gods kind of shift over time. So the whole idea of like the old gods versus the new gods, it's kind of, I don't want to say flawed, but there are also points in the book we already referenced. The gods that have their people, the people who worship those gods have forgotten. So even the old quote-unquote gods in the book, they are new compared to previous generations of gods, mm-hmm. right? So things are constantly changing. People are constantly changing what they worship and how they worship.
Or as generations go by, people are always changing what they worship.
Mm-hmm. So there's that element. And then the question is, well, what is worship? Because Kali needs you to sacrifice a fucking person or Quetzalcoatl or, you know, it needs you to cut a guy's heart out on top of a pyramid. Other gods need you... you know, to sacrifice a lamb. Megachurch gods just need you to sacrifice money.
So right, yeah.
What does it mean to worship is different. Is worship the same as just pay attention to or devote your time to or devote your resources to? Because then there's a big difference between the way we worship the media and the way we worshiped Odin. And I don't know if it's... We have to dilute our definition of God to make technology the same thing as a god as, you know, Horus. So I don't know if he's making a statement or just saying, like, this is a cool story. Which it definitely fucking is.
No, it's a cool story. I really am not sure if he was trying to make a statement or not.
I would think not. Because, you know what? I think anybody who sets out to make a statement is a pretentious fuck. And I'm going to make a statement by writing a science fiction fantasy novel? Well, that's not the best way to do it.
You don't think 1984 was written as a statement about the dangers of totalitarianism?
True.
Does that make it bad?
No, it doesn't.
I mean, I think that one is, like, obvious. Like, well, if it's clear... I think it's fine. I think having an interesting story is also good. And I would criticize 1984 for actually not having the most interesting story in the world, but sort of the world he created about the dangers of totalitarianism being, that's what makes it such an important book.
Well, I think that, I mean, I'll cheat and say that there are different types of statements you can make. Right? Like, so making a statement about political things, like, that's mm-hmm. very standard, right? And people are always commenting on and making statements about politics. Making a statement about shifting values of worship or time management, that strikes me as a little different.
Also, what does it mean, if my thesis was correct, what does it mean that in the end the war wasn't real? It was all a giant con by Odin and Loki. What does that say?
It's a great question.
Right.
Right.
Does that mean that there isn't really tension between the old world and the new world, or between traditional values and modernity? Maybe we can have both at the same time. If everybody just decides we don't need to fight it, we can do both, it's okay.
Or is this
going too far? Did
Gaiman
not mean anything?
No, I don't think
it's
going too far. I mean, it doesn't matter what he meant, right? It's what did you get? What do you think after reading it? And I think, I mean, that's an interesting point, right? At the end of the day, there really was no war. However, though, there is a conflict. There is a shifting in allegiance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People don't worship certain things anymore. Right? They mention all these various defunct gods, Mithras and all these other ones. They are not around anymore. They lost something. They might not have, you know, there might not have been a war, but they've lost. You know, they're not around. They're not here. So there is some sort of battle, I guess. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he's making that statement, but those gods are there. There's a reason why we call it Norse mythology and not Norse religion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We think, this is something we said earlier, right? We think of it as the cute things people used to think before they understood the way things are now. So they definitely lost. I think a missed opportunity in this book, really didn't spend a lot of time talking about the gods people still do worship quite a bit. Like, they mentioned Jesus in passing.
So in the show, and so I watched most of the Stars series in the past, like, 2 weeks to kind of remind myself of what happens in this book. They do make a bigger point of that. The Shadow eventually goes to this party with the god of Easter. But at the party, at the god of Easter, there's, like, the woman who's plays Easter and 25 different Jesuses. So whoever, like, oh, the Jesus of, like, these people is white. The Jesus of these people, they're black. The Jesus of these... So there's, like, a whole bunch of different Jesuses all together.
I said he missed out on talking about Jesus.
So they did talk about Jesus. Oh, yeah. So here, they do this thing in the show where they add a whole bunch of stuff where Laura, Shadow's wife, Laura Moon, has a much bigger story. One thing they do add in the show... is they make it that the reason why Shadow was locked up, it was all Laura's idea.
They mentioned that in passing in the book, but I don't remember details.
Yeah, so in the show, they, like, make it clear. It was Laura's idea, and Shadow gets caught and does the time for it.
Her idea to do what?
So in the show, it's rob a casino, because she's worked at a casino. She's, like, a dealer at a blackjack table for, like, 5-8 years or something like that. And, you know, after she meets Shadow, she's like, I know exactly, I have the perfect plan for robbing the casino. And there's other stuff about this too. So here's what we're going to do. But then he gets caught and then he has to do 5 years in prison. And he says he could take a plea bargain and she would go to jail too. But he says, no, I'm not going to do it. You're my wife. You're not going to go to jail. I'm going to go to jail instead. It'll be 5 years. Can you wait for me? And she says yes. And I'm getting into way more details. Again, also,
but she means no.
But she means no. Another thing is that they show in the, in one of the final episode is that, no, second to last episode, when Laura dies, the person driving the other car was Mad Sweeney. And he did it because Odin told him to. Because it was part of Odin's plan. So it was Mad Sweeney that did it. This is the stuff they added in the show. And I do really like the show, but they also changed a whole bunch of stuff in the show as well.
Well, you know, who was this they? Because Neil Gaiman was involved in the show.
He's an executive producer, but I think he probably, I don't know if he really wrote any of the episodes or not, or if all of these changes he really wants. I mean, but he's an executive producer, you would think he would have some say over those kinds of things. But when somebody buys the rights from a book to make it into a TV series, I'm sure he wanted it in his contract that he was an executive producer. I think you make a lot more money that way, too.
A lot of people just kind of get that as a credit, and it often is an honorific. It has very little, some people do a lot of work with that, some people don't. You know, you'll notice.
Whereas in Game of Thrones, for the first several seasons, George R.R. Martin used to actually write at least one of the episodes, if not more than one episode every season. But then he stopped so that he could finish the book, and he still hasn't finished the fucking book. Finish the book, George R.R. Martin.
Did his episodes have more or fewer tits in them? I mean, I don't know if we have anything else to say about it. I have not watched the show. I mean, they've changed stuff, but probably.
They've changed in a way that
you have to change
stuff.
Something to make it for work on TV.
Yeah, for sure. And anyway, I do really like the show. What's funny is, so the first season was 8 episodes. I want to say it's something around half the book. So if, because the final episode is where they finally explain who Odin is, that he's, who Wednesday is. He's actually Odin. They finally make that clear. Although, I want to say you probably knew already, you know, because there are enough hints. However, that's like halfway through the book. So technically, if they made one more season, and it has been renewed for another season, then they would, technically, they could finish the whole thing. But then I also read that because this is a hit for them, they want to do more than one more season. They want to do, like, 5. So I don't know if they're going to make the second half of the book into 5 more seasons, or I don't know where they're going to go with that.
It all depend on how far along Neil Gaiman is in American Gods 2.
True.
They might take elements of those short stories that came out. I don't know how they could do that, perhaps. Or Anansi Boys. Or also, they could just keep adding more god stories, because those are interesting, right? The little vignettes where it's like, here's how this god got to America, or here's how this person met this god, this random character. Though I think, I haven't seen the show, but when they tell you who Odin is this when they're at that, like, weird fucking, the House on the Rock?
It's not at the House on the Rock.
Because that's where it is in the book, where they really spell it out.
They don't do the House on the Rock. It's actually at Easter's house. This is the final episode, where Easter, who is, you know, played by what the fuck was Kristen Chenoweth? Anyway, she plays Easter. It's actually there that they make this whole announcement. The word where the Odin actually tells Shadow who he is for real.
Because in the book, it's at the House on the Rock, which is like a third way through the book, and they go in someone's mind, right? They go on the carousel and they're in somebody's mind
and they are transported to the magic world.
Yeah, but everybody shows their various forms and they're shifting between being Wednesday and then being like a guy soaked in blood holding a sword and then a guy hanging from a tree and then Anansi's like an old black man and then all of a sudden he's a spider and then he's like a weird other character and Chernabog is the old fucking grizzled dude and then all of a sudden he's like a black demon thing and then he's a guy with a hammer. They keep like shifting shapes to show their and that's when you kind of figure it out as the reader at least. Mm-hmm. So they must have tweaked out of that. But you know, if they make a bigger show out of it, you know, whatever. That's the thing. We've seen there's a lot of shows lately that have been made into TV series instead of making into a lot of books made into TV shows instead of making them into a movie, because a movie's so finite. Like, you have an hour and 50-minute running minutes, or whatever it is.
Even if you make it 2.5 hours and nobody actually wants to sit through that much, you still have to cut a ton.
Yeah, you do. And there's way more money to be made, though, with these TV shows.
Now in the golden age of TV.
Whatever. I'll take it. So join us next week when we read
Packing for Mars by Mary Roach.
Right on. In the meantime, you could follow us at DrunkGuysBC on Twitter, or
send us an email, drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
We'll see you there.
Thanks for listening.